Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel, Joel Elkanen, Dennis Dick with you this morning. Big show for us today. Mark Chaykin at 8:15 from Chaykin Analytics. And then at 9, we got the CFO of Chegg, Andy Brown. So we're going to talk education, the future of that, and his recent stock performance is incredible. We'll talk that with him at 9. In between that, we've got earnings, a lot of earnings. We've got the airlines up today on talks of another airline bailout type situation. Costco had their sales for July yesterday. They were amazing. Blue Apron down on an offering. So a lot to get to on our show. Let's bring on Joel Elkanen. He can recap for what is happening for us here in the pre-market session because we are a little weak.
Yeah, good morning, traders and investors. A little bit of weakness here in the S&P 500 index futures. Let me illustrate this with the chart. Made a new high for the move, went up to 29.25. That eclipsed the high from yesterday at 23.25. So that was a pretty good sell. And we leaked a little bit. Momentum picked up around 6:45, 7 o'clock here. And you can see we went down 30050, the old psychological 3000 level. That was the area of the close on Tuesday. What I'm looking for, maybe a downside target, Wednesday's Globex low at 92. That would be 32.92. Crude giving a little bit back here, down 24 cents at 41.95 after spending a little time in a 42 handle. Gold is ripping. I don't even want to look at my GDX. Gold's up $23.20 at 2,700. So 2,072.30, and silver's ripping. That's up $1.50 at 28.38. Looking for the 30 handle here in silver. And once again, Bitcoin doesn't want to be left out. Bitcoin's up $55 at 11,905. Those are the futures, and we did hit 12,000 momentarily. Triple D, I know you're in a fast market over there. I hope you're hedged overnight because this is a little unusual activity on the downside.
Yeah, and I always stay hedged on my day trading portfolio, and maybe that's a good segue just, you know, to talk about that because, you know, obviously I trade a little different style. What I try to trade, and I've talked about this before, is market neutral, and what that means is I have equal longs and equal shorts. So when the market is up and the market, you know, tanks all of a sudden, I'm not going to get slammed in my day trading portfolio because my shorts will pick up the slack. What I'm trying to do is make money on my individual calls, and I don't want the overall market to, you know, to tank, and, you know, I'm all long stocks, and maybe I pick good stocks, but they tank just because the overall market's going down. So, you know, I make calls on value versus growth. You know, I'm trying to extract alpha from little individual inefficiencies. And obviously, we know I do a lot of index arbitrage. I do risk arbitrage. I do a whole types of different types of trading, but I also make calls too. And, you know, I might like a setup and say, okay, I'll buy some of this, but I'm going to short a little bit of SPY against it just in case the market tanks. I'm going to short a little Qs against my tech stock just in case the market tanks. So I always trade market neutral. So I am always hedged in my day trading portfolio. Long-term investing, I'm just always long. I never put a short on in my long-term portfolio. I raise cash, but I'm always long. But on my day trading portfolio, my break trading account, it's almost always hedged.
And that's one thing that you did not learn from me.
The hedging strategies.
All right.
That's why, you know, I trade SPY every day, and it's usually my hedge. Right now, I'm short SPY because I was long some stocks from last night. I was actually putting on a little bit of value versus SPY last night. That's not working that great because that trade is reversed. And maybe we should talk about that because last night we got some news from Donald Trump that they were considering another airline bailout. And the airlines blasted off on that just because he said that. And they've started to leak the gains, though, Spencer. Is there any other details you have on that?
Yeah, so it's funny because we've been waiting for weeks now for some sort of additional stimulus for everybody else, right? Because that ran out at the end of July. We haven't gotten anything from that yet. Congress said they're trillions of dollars apart on the overall stimulus package. But in terms of the bailouts, I guess we're further along on another $25 billion because that's what was given to the airlines the first time around. And so what the president said is they're looking at giving an additional $25 billion to the airlines the airlines.
And for some reason, and this market is funny, and you know, just because you see something, you think it's going to do this, sometimes it does the opposite. The airlines all blast off last night. Bring up AAL. It might be the best example because one of the most volatile stocks. Trade up to 1340 on the news. Actually, 1360 I can see there. Was actively trading in the 1340 area, though, pretty much all night. And then they just started to leak, and it started to leak. And now, if you look, it's leaked back about two-thirds of the gains here. So still trading in the green, which is good news on a down day, but also concerning that not holding the gains on excellent, you know, news for them individually. Do I agree with bailing out all the airlines? I think it's tough. I think it's tough to just be throwing money if it's just going to be a Band-Aid and, you know, and there's going to be a lot less people flying. You know, I just don't want to see the taxpayers end up, you know, losing money here because we have seen airlines go bankrupt before. But Trump has said this, and he doesn't want any companies to go bankrupt on his watch. So he's going to do whatever he can and throw whatever money that he can, you know, despite obviously putting our grandkids in a lot more debt. I mean, there's nothing that we, you know, on a personal level can do except just go with it and understand as traders what it means. And it means that he doesn't want any companies to fail. We've seen the reopening rally the last few days.
Yeah.
It continues a little bit here this morning. But with that being said, a little concerning that we have leaked the gains in the airlines.
Nice confluence here. That popped to 13. Well, actually, I've seen 1360 right on the kisser. The purple and the what is that? Magenta. What's that other light blue cover? Those colors represent the pre-market
purple
trading.
Purple and blue.
Purple and blue. After hours in pre-market trading at high at 1360, perfectly coincided. I'm going to move over here to the daily chart on the right. That high on the daily chart was 1348. We got to 1360. That was a big level. We didn't immediately come off it, but that's going to be a big level to watch in today's session. 1260 is, I call it, intermediate support here on the 15-minute chart. But pop, that's a big area. And Dennis, I'll give you some kudos. You were kind of leaning towards, you know, on the reopening trade the last couple days.
Yeah.
You were kind of leaning that way.
Yeah, and I've been biased. I made some money on Boeing. I've been biased long the reopening stocks versus short the tech stocks, just making a call that value versus tech would outperform. Yesterday, that very much worked. We saw IWM have a fantastic day, and the QQQs were basically flat. So that trade worked very well yesterday. I mean, it's now 2-3 days, and it seems like every time this gets to about the third day, it starts to come off and the trade starts to go the other way again. We know QQQ versus IWM, QQQ long versus IWM short has been a fantastic trade since the bottom, since March and April, because a lot of the reopening stocks haven't rallied nearly as much as some of these tech stocks. But, you know, it's crowded. And there's no better example than the earnings here today to talk to you about crowded trades, because you see, and you can look at a stock like PZZA, Papa John's, and you can say, man, that was an awesome report. Why is the stock trading down? The simple reason is that it was a crowded trade. I actually shorted the stock last night ahead of the report. And I said to my buddy, I think they beat, I think they kill it, I think they still bring it down. And I covered already this morning. I was shorting at 102 and I was a little covering the 97.
Not
handle.
Much traded up there at 102.
I traded a little bit though. It was trading for a while. So I traded multiple times between 101 and 102. It was pretty much up there. And actually this morning, it got the lift right into the same area, 102, 103 on the good new report. And then they started to leak, and I thought about even adding to it because I could have had like a 102 bid. And I was like, I don't know. So you're selling a good report. Give us a number, Spencer. But this is just crowded trades 101.
Yeah, it was good. I wasn't saying it was like the greatest report ever or anything. Q2 EPS, they did beat 48 cents per share versus a 45 cent estimate. Sales did miss 460 versus $468 million. So mixed on the headline numbers for Papa John's, I did not look any deeper than that.
Yeah, and I saw something about that the sales, the same store sales, I think were up still over 30% for July. So that's a number that the market would really like as well. But again, the stock has just run too far. So this is a matter of priced for perfection, and it wasn't a perfect quarter. So predictably, it actually started to come off. So I got a little bit of money on that. It's trading down 97.03. Like I said, I've already covered it. you look at the opposite story here. And let's go to QSR.
Wait, listen, let me do real quick on this, Triple D.
Yeah, go ahead.
Trading at yesterday's low, which was 96.52. So you're getting a reset there. You're not even at a gap area. But my number for this is going to be 94.70. That's what I'd be looking for on the downside. That splits the pair of lows from Monday and Tuesday, 94.72, 94.66.
And going the opposite way, so the opposite story here, QSR. And bring up the numbers for QSR, and you'll get a completely different picture here because obviously this is an order out pizza. This is Popeyes, which I think some of them have drive-through, but not all of them do, and Burger King and Tim Hortons. Give us the numbers for QSR.
Yeah, this report was not as good. Earnings per share last quarter, 33 cents versus a 56 cent estimate. Sales 1.05 versus 1.15 billion dollars. So a miss and a miss on the headline numbers for QSR. Like you said, it's not a delivery centric business.
Yeah. So there you go. Delivery, we know, is firing on all cylinders, and this is not. So I guess they look out and they say, well, you know, we think all the bad news is still baked in here, and they're buying the stock up anyways. There was a renewal of their normal course issuer, which might be actually helping this in their normal course issuer bid because they're looking at doing a slight repurchase on some
of
their stock.
Explain that one, please?
Oh, man, you're going to get me all fundamental here at 8 in the morning.
No,
so it's just a way to do a buyback.
Okay.
So it's a fancy way, and it's just doing a buyback. So they're looking, if I'm just looking at the notice here, I'm just reading it as I go. So I haven't read this. I just saw the headline, but I just clicked onto it. So they may, RBI, Restaurant Brands, may purchase up to $300 million of its common stock over the next year. So they're talking that they suspended that. I believe they suspended it, if I'm remembering correctly, and now they're reinstating it. So they're looking at doing a little bit of a buyback. So they must see, you know, that it's obviously, you know, turning around to a certain extent. So I think that's a reason why the stock is not down significantly on a very bad report. But it just goes to show you too, the crowded trades, and we've talked about this for a long time. Crowded trades, it doesn't matter sometimes what the numbers are. It matters more what the sentiment is going in. And obviously in this case, sentiment for QSR was very, you know, poor, so they can beat the lower expectations. And something like Papa John's, everybody expecting them to blow everything away, and they don't blow it away, and that's when it starts to leak. So sentiment matters sometimes more than the numbers.
Okay, the Pop got to a nice round number, 60, 59, 98. But I'm just going to look at this chart, and what just really stands out to me is $58. You snuck up to $58.80 yesterday. I do realize that. $57.75 close. But it just, when you look at these dailies here, it just seems like someone was wiggling it out at $58. You look at all these highs, a double top at 816, another top at 808, and another one at 818, 828. So I'm just looking at that chart, and I'm thinking, if it gets over 58, holds 58, boom, we'll make a run. But it's just such a persistent resistance level going back over the last month. Conversely, on the downside, you got to hold 56. So still in the trading range. Let's see if it can bust out of it today off the earnings report.
Another example of crowded trades coming off two stocks, Etsy and Roku. And maybe we can do them together, Mr. Israel, because it's 276 stocks reporting. I think, you know, we might have to combo these to get a couple in. Both of these stocks, pretty good quarters. Both of these stocks are red because the expectations were simply too high.
Yeah, and after I read these numbers, we'll bring Mark Chicken on here in a second.
Sure.
Q2 EPS for Roku, 35 cent loss versus a 51 cent loss estimate. So good beat there. Mm-hmm. Sales beat 356 million versus 312 million. Good beat on the top and bottom lines for Roku. Etsy, same story. Beat and a beat. A very big beat for Etsy, actually.
Yes.
On the EPS. A huge beat. So big beats for Roku and Etsy, but not seeing that play out in the stock.
Yeah, and they lifted initially because the algos just say, oh, beat, beat, buy, buy, and that just doesn't work sometimes. Obviously, in this market, there's a lot more to it. They've run. I mean, Roku's $100 a month and a half ago. It's 165. It was at the close, 156 now. So not surprising that they pull the rug out from under it. Etsy has just been straight up in the quarter. I mean, to a ridiculous level. Like the thing went from $100 5 days ago to $135. So you're talking about stocks up 30% in a week and a half. So again, expectations just simply too high. Hell of a quarter. Company firing on all cylinders, but expectations too high and the trade was crowded, so it's coming off a little bit. Is Mark there?
If you were quick, real quick.
Yeah.
We'll bring Mark in. Go ahead.
Yeah, bring Mark in.
I'm bringing him on, but Joel, finish your thought.
Man, if you were hawking that all-time high in Roku, you got filled. 176.55 was your all-time high from September, and they ripped it higher than that. You were probably regretting it when they hit 178.77, but they pulled the rug out, trying to find support here at 156. I'll look at the dailies here and post some levels. Etsy, the craft company, same. Popped new time all-time high, holding 134. For me, for this one, as long as we hold above yesterday's low, which is 130.38, I mean, I think the bull is still in control. We'll see what happens at yesterday's low. Hello, Mr. Chaykin.
Yeah, I'm bringing Mark on here. Mark Chaykin is the founder.
Good morning, Vietnam.
How's it going, Mark?
It's going well. I was outside cleaning up sticks, twigs, and leaves from the tornado that hit Connecticut.
The tornado?
Yeah, actually, how you think, Mark, because my parents don't have power, and they're not going to have power for a few days.
Really?
Yeah.
Same here. We're working on a backup generator, fortunately, and propane's holding out.
Yeah. Everybody okay?
Yeah, everybody's great. The tornado didn't hit here, but two tornadoes. This is the second worst natural disaster to hit Connecticut in 100 years.
Is that being spawned from the hurricane?
Yeah, it's gone, and yesterday was a beautiful day, but Tuesday was hell on wheels.
I think people who lived through Sandy got generators, a lot of them at least. So, I mean, that's what my parents did. So glad that everyone's okay in your neck of the woods, Mark, because that storm looked like it was bad.
It was scary.
So let's talk about the market here. What are your thoughts on where we are right now?
I'm still very bullish on the market. This was supposed to be choppy August. Well, it's anything but choppy, although today we're starting out with a little bit of weakness in the futures, as you pointed out, ahead of the employment claims number. You've got a market that's feeding off all this liquidity. There's nowhere else for people to go. And yeah, you're getting some profit-taking stocks like Etsy and Roku. Regeneron yesterday opened at a new all-time high and then sold off fairly sharply, 3 or 4%. But then other stocks like Teva in the pharmaceuticals, Horizon Therapeutics, reported just blowout numbers and kept going because people weren't expecting it. So I'm looking at two bellwether stocks. I'm looking at Overstock.com and Wayfair. We buy from both of them. I wish I could say that I was on board 3 months ago, 2 months ago, 1 month ago, but they just keep going. And I think those are your bellwethers. As long as those stocks keep going up, I think you can safely believe the market's going to work its way higher.
This Overstock has just been unbelievable, and I can't believe it either. So we got down in March to $2 on this.
Yeah.
To $2, and you think, okay, well, it's going out of business. When it goes from 80 to 2, you think, okay, it's probably going to the rest of it to zero, because this is just why, well, I guess stocks don't go to zero. We even see that with Hertz. So maybe it would have been a no-brainer buy at $2 if we would have known that they don't even take bankrupt companies to zero. But, I mean, I don't think anybody would have expected this thing to make new all-time highs when it falls from $85 to $2. And then and 4 months later, it would be making new all-time highs. That is unbelievable. This has got to be one of the stocks of the year. That's an unbelievable comeback.
I'll add to your, if not pain, your amazement, the power gauge, Chaykin power gauge rating turned bullish on April 20th at $8.
We got to get at a Chaykin power gauge. We got to have that on our screen all the time.
You got to have it.
$8 and to 93, and it's remained bullish the whole time?
Yeah. Hasn't budged, outperforming
the
market.
There were no real dip. I mean, there were some dips in there.
Yeah, the dips were so minor, and
that it never turned.
It's not technical; it's fundamental.
Yeah,
and it's looking at analyst estimates and opinions. But Wayfair, same thing. Wayfair reported blowout numbers the other day, and it didn't back away at all. The difference between Etsy and Wayfair or Overstock is Overstock and Wayfair have broad merchandise lines. Etsy is sort of a one-trick pony, although, you know, they're playing that game very well. But if you look at, I mean, I know where we're spending our money. You know, it's Amazon, but then when you want something specific for the home, patio, porch, pool, we're looking on Wayfair, we're looking on Overstock. I said to Sandy, if we had invested in Overstock, what we bought from them, we would have.
What do you buy from them, Mark?
We buy porch furniture, covers for the porch furniture, but they're like, you know, they're an entree to a lot of different brands. Some brands you can get on Amazon, but they're so cheap when, and they're doing specials all the time. They give you 25% coupon when you log on and give them your email address. These guys are doing it right. Remember, they got rid of that crazy CEO who got them into Bitcoin and online trading. I think that was in sometime in 2020. And since then, it's being run like a company, not like a speechifying platform.
And a lot of people think this is still just a Bitcoin company, but it's not really anymore. Like you said, you know, there's still, I think, a little bit of exposure there, but for the most part, this is just online shopping.
It is online shopping at a discount, and it's not always, you know, the primo quality merchandise, but the user feedback is so good that you can pretty much tell when something is, you know, a bogus sale or something you want to pass on. I mean, they've got so much traffic on that site. And so you get great customer feedback. But I mean, the market is more than just about these online shopping stocks. The biotech and the pharmaceutical stocks are doing so well. And there's a lot of money to be made there.
There was news here on Bristol Myers, multiple headlines last night. They got a positive ruling on one of their drugs, and Bristol Myers and Pfizer are comboing that one. I think I never pronounce the drug names right here, Spencer. So if you want to get my back,
only
pro,
Brent does that.
Yeah, I know we never do them well, but they got a positive ruling on ACT. I'm not even going to try it. So pause ruling on a truck, and the stock popped $3. But then you come in, you look here, and it's giving back a little bit because it did report earnings here this morning. But, I mean, big pharma has performed well. Biotechs, you know, we know have been still performing fairly well and holding up fairly well. Let's just talk overall industry. What are your thoughts on pharma?
Well, big pharma has disappointed. Bristol Myers, you know, has been stuck in the 55, 56, 60 range. I think it's all about vaccines and biotech drugs. I like the whole sector, but I'd rather focus on biotech than on pharma.
What biotech stocks are you looking at, if you're looking at any individual ones?
Horizon Therapeutics, and the only reason I'm looking at it is Sandy found it with the Chaikin screener, HZNP. They reported just blowout numbers yesterday. Revenue is like 50% higher than anticipated. And they've got one drug, I can't pronounce it either, but they up the annual sales projection from $1 billion to $3 billion. It's a stock I didn't even know about. It's just huge, huge numbers. And there are other ones, you know, BioMarin and lots of stocks that are benefiting from the focus on vaccines, the focus on biotech in general. I think it's a matter of focus right now.
HZNP also did announce a $700 million common stock offering. That was yesterday afternoon. So going to weigh on the stock here this morning.
But think about it. These offerings are great. Well, these companies are raising money.
They need them. Right. They need them.
This stock was $25. In the fall, they're now selling money at 3x where they were trading. It's amazing.
I mean, that's just smart management. Smart management. And, you know, that's one thing. It's a big difference. We said this a couple days ago on the show. There's a big difference between doing an offering to survive and doing an offering to grow. And I always like buying companies that are doing offerings to grow. And obviously, when you have a good trials, you're trying to grow and you're trying to fund the next level of trials. So you're right, and they're, you know, able to sell stock this high. Why not get some cash going so you can fund those trials?
Notice who's not raising cash: manufacturing companies.
Why do you think that is?
Because they don't need money. The rest of the world is mature. That's why there's such a big focus on tech. Even when we get out of this quagmire we're in and we get a vaccine down the road, manufacturing is basically dead in America. And people are looking at biotech. They're looking at technology in general. They're looking at the changing trends with work at home, shop at home. And, except for some of these biotech companies, which do need to fund, second and third stage research, capital is not a big deal, except look at what Google did. Why in the world did Google need $10 billion? But they raised it at the lowest, they raised it in the bond market, the lowest interest rates ever for a big company. So when you question why the market is going up based on, traditional valuation analysis or metrics, companies are awash with cash. They can raise whatever they want to raise. And it's a wash of liquidity that just keeps, waving over this market. Now, there'll be a correction. I don't know when. I don't know what's going to trigger it. Trump is, and Pompeo are, making loud noises about China again, keeping technology off the U.S. platforms. But this market shrugs it all off, and that doesn't mean it makes sense, except when you look at liquidity.
Yep. The trend is your friend. It'll shrug it off until it doesn't, and by that point, we'll know. But it's always a question of how long does the party go?
Well, and that's a question too, Mark, I have for you, is you see this rotation the last 3 days into value and a little bit coming off of tech. And every time we get to about the third day, it seems like that trade just reverses again and the money flows back into tech and they start selling off the value stocks. Is there any hope here? Like I do see, the IWM starting to look like it's ready to break out. Obviously, a lot of value stocks and the small caps there. Is there some hope here for value?
There's only two things that will get value up, the yield curve steepening and a vaccine. And so periodically you get whispers about inflation and the yield curve steepening, and the Fed actually said they're gonna rethink how they deal with inflation to try and get it up. And so that helps small caps. They're always performing better when the yield curve is steepening. But the vaccine that reopens the economy is probably the only concrete thing that's going to get value stocks moving. And, why do you want value when the proven earnings are in the tech stocks? I mean, look at NVIDIA. NVIDIA made a new all-time high. Yeah, tech has been under pressure, but then you find isolated names that I think
they just don't go down.
Yeah, indicative of where the market is, because NVIDIA is... Yeah, NVIDIA's got their fingers in five different pies, as you know. So why fish around in value? It's not just bottom fishing. It's contrary for contrary's sake. It's not going to make you money in the short run. And in the short run, you're better off in some of these names on dips.
Hey, Mark, when's this metal rally going to end?
It's amazing. When stocks like Freeport, Mac Moran are moving up, you're in a trend. Gold is a heads I win, tails you lose proposition, because if we get inflation, you want to own gold. If we're looking like deflation, you want to own gold. It's gotten critical liftoff, and it's out of the atmosphere and in orbit. And normally when gold is up, 13 weeks in a row, 7 weeks in a row, it pauses. There's no pause here. Someone made an interesting point. If you're under 50 or under 40, you buy Bitcoin. If you're over 40, you buy gold.
Mark Chaikin is the founder of Chaikin Analytics, joins us every other Thursday. Mark, good to know that you're safe, and keep on staying safe. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Here we come with a number. Let's see what this is.
Yeah, we're lifting. We're lifting.
Got initial jobs claims out a few seconds ago. 1.186 million claims filed last week. That was, but not as many as expected. 1.41 was the estimate. It is less than the estimate and less than last week's reading. So not as alarming as yesterday's ADP number was, which is good to know as far as tomorrow's jobs report is concerned. But continuing claims continuing to fall. So we've seen ADP be out of whack before with the other economic data points, the jobs claims and the jobs number. ADP yesterday, very alarming for private payrolls, but not an alarming jobless claims number today. So that's a good sign.
Yeah, by the dippers are doing just that. We hit a low at 30050, getting a nice boost here, moving up towards mid-range on the session. That mid-range comes in at 33.15. I also kind of like that area because your close and your high close for the rebound was right there too. So 33.16. We know what our target is here on this little rally.
Big pop today, obviously, just here in the last few minutes from the market. I'm just trying to look overall, and this is a very tricky day. Most stocks are down. Obviously, we know the airlines are trading higher off of Trump. But again, it's one of those days that it's going to be rotation station. You're going to see some stocks higher, some stocks lower. Last night, it was looking like it was going to be the value winning over growth again. But from this morning, that has kind of turned a certain bit. So just keep in mind that these rotations are wicked. And, you know, you just can't be saying, okay, well, market's going up, I'm going to buy this stock, I'm going to buy Apple because it's going up too. You've got to be aware of how the rotation is going. Obviously, you know, everything's lifting in Apple, maybe isn't the best example because it seems like it goes up no matter what, just like Mark was saying with NVIDIA and AMD. I mean, there's just some stocks that just seem to go up no matter what. But overall, in the last couple of days, we've definitely seen value outperforming tech. I just don't know how long that trade's last.
Can we get some more earnings? I've got a lot more.
Sure.
I want to start with Kronos here quickly. It is trading down this morning. The numbers were not great, and I will tell you why. So the Q2 EPS for Kronos, CRON, they lost 31 cents per share last quarter. That was down from a 17 cent gain a year ago. Sales increased 9.88 million versus 7.68 million a year ago, but their earnings fell dramatically year over year. Why did that happen? Here's what they said in their release. They said the decrease was driven by an increase in the cost of sales, driven by a higher volume of adult use sales, and a lack of wholesale revenue, as well as an inventory write-down of 3.1 million of dried cannabis and cannabis extracts. In other words, we have way too much weed.
There's too much supply. I mean, Gordon Johnson has been on here, and he said they got like a year and a half of supply in Canada, and they don't know what to do with it all. And this is the issue. I mean, yeah, these pot stocks continue, you know, they pop up, they get some life, and then they seem to drift back down. I mean, some of the charts look fairly healthy. So if you're just ignoring all the fundamentals, which this market does anyways, and you just look at the charts, you think, okay, we'll pull back here on Kronos this morning, maybe I'm buying it. I mean, Tilray, if you look at that one, huge support at $7. If you look at ACB, it's trying to find support in this $10 area. If you look at Aphria, which reported, it's stabilized here in the 450 area. So you think, okay, well, Kronos got pretty good support between 6 and 650. So maybe I'm a buyer of those pullbacks. But if you're trying to throw the fundies in with it, then you maybe get a different picture, because what you're saying, there's just too much supply there. And maybe eventually that comes to roost in the fact that these earnings reports aren't going to be great. And that's what we saw from Aphria. It wasn't great. Kronos wasn't great either. So it's a tricky market, you know, to continue to just ignore fundamentals all the time, because I don't think the fundamentals are that great in the pot industry, but the charts don't look that bad.
We'll just stick with a Kronos here to see what the action is. Trading at 660. I mean, you got 3-4 lows in this area. I don't mind you seeing it take a stab here. Yeah. I see 650, but I mean,
I never like to buy on day one, though. The one thing I will say is when you're buying a dip on earnings, a lot of times it's better to wait till day two or three. Let the thing stabilize. Like, don't try to catch the falling knife. Just because you got a big level doesn't mean it can't cut through it like a hot knife through butter. So usually on day one, I wait, and then I kind of see, is it going to stabilize, or are they just going to take it out through multiple levels? So in this case, same thing. Kronos is just reported here. So, you know, it's still trying to trade 172,000 shares. I mean, it's traded some stock, but it's been a lot of stock on this trade today. So I think you wait a day or two and you see if you can find some stabilization in the low sixes.
I do want to also mention, if you pop over to Benzinga's YouTube channel at 2 p.m. Eastern Time today, you'll see the Benzinga Cannabis Hour. We're moving it over from a different YouTube channel to our main YouTube channel. So we're going to be interviewing a number of cannabis executives. It's a bi-weekly show. Benzinga's YouTube channel, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, the Cannabis Hour. Check it out. I highly recommend it. It's in terms of level of production, that's what we are aspiring to be on our show. So that is Cronos. What about Costco here? They're out with their July sales yesterday after the close. And wow, were they good. Up 13%, 13.2% year over year in terms of comparable sales. E-commerce sales up 75% year over year in July.
I mean, just fires on all cylinders all the time. It's the best retailer really out there. You can say Walmart, I guess Amazon, but obviously Amazon's Amazon. But if you're just comparing big box stores, Costco just rocks. And again, every time you get a pullback, it's just another buying opportunity. I'm kicking myself because I wanted to buy it down at 300. I want to buy it 250. I've wanted to buy this stock forever. It trades with a higher valuation. I never stomach it, but you got to just ignore valuation in this market. And you get pullbacks on the stocks that are firing on all cylinders, they're buying opportunities, and Costco is one of those.
You know, I am really kicking myself on this one.
We're both got sore
bumps. No, because I had a major buy signal in this about a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. Did you want to know what the buy signal
was? What was it?
No.
What I went to Costco, and they're not giving samples anymore.
They haven't been doing that for months, Joel.
But it finally kicked in, man. They're saving so much money. I'm not.
that's not Costco.
Yes. Well, it's. I'm telling you, man. There are those ladies out there, and they stand there, and then they take them out of the oven, and everyone jumps on the lady and everything.
They're saving millions
of dollars.
No, I'm pretty
millions
sure
of dollars.
I'm sure that's outsourced. I'm pretty sure that's outsourced.
I don't even know if they pay for that.
No,
I think those are just the companies that are trying to sell and promote their own product.
Yeah,
so I don't even think Costco pays for that.
No, I don't think they do either. I think it's outsourced to another company, and the samples themselves are from the
products.
The product, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're correct. I think it's the product. I'm not sure. I'm not a fundamental analyst on Costco to tell you where it all breaks down from. I'll tell you, they don't even care about the bottom line. They've never cared about the bottom line. So savings on the bottom line is really not a concern for Costco. It's that top line growth. And they're growing 75% sales growth online, 13% same store sales in a pandemic. I mean, Costco works no matter what.
Yeah, nice chart. It was real sleepy for a while, and then it finally broke out here from 330. I'll just give you the pre-market high. There's not a lot of volume trading on this, right? Triple D, if you look at it.
You got to be careful. This isn't one of those situations where they sell it off on good news. So you just
I
be careful.
So. That's what I, yeah. If I was in this.
I don't chase.
If I bought it off my sample thing, which I didn't. And also you could say people aren't eating the samples, so they're hungrier, so they're buying more food before they leave.
that's a bit of a stretch, I think.
Come on.
We'll give you something there.
All right.
I'll give you a little bit of that.
So we're talking 346 here. Right. Pre-market
right
high, 346.40. So keep an eye on that. Not a lot of volume associated with this.
All right. Before we go back to the earnings, we do have an offering this morning, Blue Apron, with a 4 million share offering they announced yesterday afternoon or evening. Kind of expected. You know what's expected? We haven't seen the Kodak offering yet. I guess maybe because they're under investigation now.
Jail.
Maybe we're not going to see that.
Did they announce one? They didn't announce one.
That's what I'm saying. They haven't announced one yet. We all thought they would. Blue Apron is announcing one here. Their stock has rallied. So not a total surprise.
We got the pricing on the space offering too last night around 11 o'clock. Finally got it. Took a long time. $19.50. So that's the line in the sand. Somebody asked me, am I buying more space? I kind of want to. I got a pretty sizable position in already though, and obviously I've watched most of my gains disappear. So do you get a second shot? I think if I wasn't in it, I would be buying it down here. Again, this is speculative capital. It's a story stock. There's no earnings. Obviously we don't know who's going to fly to space, but I think they could do a lot of different things with this. It's one of those companies that I'm putting in my long-term portfolio and I don't plan to look at it for a decade. So not a trade. But even as a trade here, it's come off and, do you get some support in here eventually in the teens? I think so. So it's an interesting level around 1950 because that's where the offering price is.
Hey, speaking of companies with no revenue, remember we were talking about Nikola yesterday. This is what happens when you dig into the filings. You can find some cool stuff. Remember how I said they did have $36,000 of revenue last quarter? And you said, how did they get that? Mm-hmm. You want to know how they got that revenue?
How? Oh.
Installing solar panels for the founder.
One job.
Yeah, yeah. They installed solar panels.
And the founder paid him $36,000.
And
the founder worth now?
And he paid the company. So
what's the founder worth?
What's the stock at?
Yeah. Like how many shares he's got? Like, you know, on a company that's and one thing with the founder, we talk about how promotional they've been too. And I mean, you know, we've had, you know, who do we have? The CFO on the show?
We had the CEO. He was not
the founder. But he's not the founder.
No, the founder is.
I mean, the market cap on Nikola, which has never sold a truck before, is $13 billion. So, you know, there's a lot of hope there that this is going to be the next big EV play. They think, you know, it could be the next Tesla. It very well could be. You know, who am I to say it's not going to be? But $13 billion isn't dropping the bucket. They got that thing valued like this is for real. And we don't know if it's for real yet. That's obviously why the price has come off significantly there. But I don't know how many shares the founder's got, but I think the $36,000 job didn't break the bank. So,
no.
200 stop plus stocks reporting. I had a couple that I was actually surprised at, but I don't know. Do we have it from the chat? Do we want to go to the chat?
Well, what were you surprised at? And then we'll go to the chat.
There's a few. Like Western Digital, I was surprised at how poorly they really did. And I mean, this is just an example of you're loved or you're hated. And Western Digital is now in the Intel crowd, and they are hated.
Yep.
And the reason, obviously, they cut that dividend, we looked like 3 months ago, to nothing. And that was out of the blue. And that should have been an indicator that, hey, you know, they obviously aren't going to be doing that great going forward. And the earnings themselves for the quarter were okay. The earnings themselves were okay. $1.23 versus $1.21, $4.29 billion versus $4.34 billion. So just a slight miss on the sales. It's the guidance that was like, wow.
Yep.
This thing is guiding down to the extreme. So they were supposed to make $1.33 for next quarter. They're estimated to make 45 to 65 cents. So you're talking like, you know, 40% of what they were going to make. Sales, they guided down. Estimates were $4.35 billion, 3.7 to 3.9. So I guess my question is, why is Western Digital doing so poorly? And you've got other chip makers, and, you know, obviously it's a little different customer base maybe, but just firing on all cylinders. What is Western Digital doing wrong? Because this stock is absolutely hated, and they're not doing well at all. And you see stocks like, I don't know, maybe it's a poor comparison to talk, you know, with AMD and stuff, but they all make chips.
I mean, they all make the same thing, don't they?
Well, they've got to have different customers and stuff. So, you know, this is data storage. It's a little bit different. Maybe it's not computing as much, but, you know, they're chip makers. So I just don't understand why, I'm not an analyst in the industry, but it's unbelievable how, you know, you're at Western Digital that just is basically back at its March lows. And you've got a stock like AMD that, you know, it's tripled or at least doubled.
Well, doesn't Western Digital they make like hard drives and stuff? And
they do a little bit of all that. Yes.
So if we're going on the cloud and away from
maybe
hard drives,
there you go. Now we're thinking. Do say cloud storage right on their like company description though. So they got that put on there. But maybe you're right.
I would say that too.
Yeah. So maybe you're right. Maybe it's too much, like here, and we want to be up in the cloud. So, and maybe that's it. But I don't own any Western Digital. I've owned it before. You still got your WDC, Joel?
No, I sold that. I sold that.
You sold out too. You sold that well. You trade that well. When Joel gets back in Western Digital, he's like the Western Digital trader over here. So I should be throwing this to you. You've done it pretty well. So give me your technical thoughts.
I don't know. This has been like a yo-yo here. I mean, if you want to take a shot here, somebody has an opinion at 39 right now. This is just in the pre-market trading. Pre-market low came in at 38.50. You're perilously close to the low of the move here. So 37.65, believe it or not, that was the low in May. Actually got a little bit lower in March. So I don't know. I mean, it's just been dead, been in the trading range, broke down through that $40. So maybe hold out for that May low.
I guess they don't make chips. So I've always just thrown them in into the category of all of them, but I guess
they're in the category, but they're in the category. But like I said, I think it's like hard drives.
Yeah. It's funny. You trade something for a decade and I always thought they were making chips too. I guess they don't. I'm just looking here too, and the chat's telling me they don't. So
I mean, tomato, tomato.
Mostly storage.
Tomato, tomato, hard drive, cloud. It's all storage.
That's all the same thing.
It's all storage.
Fundamentals don't matter in this market anyways. Moving on.
Yeah. what else was on your list? And then we'll go to some stocks in the chat.
Did we get the FLIR numbers?
I didn't see.
FLIR? They're supposed to report, aren't they?
Got them at 7:30. Okay. EPS beat 64 cents versus 52 cents.
Yep.
Sales 482 versus 473 million. So beat to beat.
This is the, you know, this is obviously thermal imaging, and I'm long it. I know Jason Rasnick's long it. It's a reopening play for sure, because, you know, I think eventually everybody's going to scan. So the earnings were pretty good. Does this get hot again? I think he's just got to, this is all about, you know, vaccines. And obviously if we're all going to lockdown, you don't need thermal imaging anymore. But if we're going to reopen everything and open up the whole economy, be a lot of FLIR systems that are going to be scanning people's temperatures. So, and obviously looking, you know, for temperature within your body by using the thermal imaging part of it. So I look at this as a reopening play. It's trading up here. I'm still in it. Great support down at 40. The earnings were pretty good. It's not really lifting much though.
Yeah, he did get to 44.20. I think for this one, if it holds, the longer it holds 43 here, I think it's better. You had highs in late June and then early July, once again in July. That's just been a pesky area here. So I know we traded above it yesterday to, it, you know, almost 43.50. But that's it. Hold 43 here. I like this to the upside.
People all want to talk. So they're throwing us symbols. Let's go to the chat for a little while here. I haven't done Datadog in a while, DDOG. Move away from the earnings. Let's just do ticker time here for a few minutes.
Okay, DDOG. Yeah, they didn't report, but they're on the calendar, I think.
When are they? Yeah.
Let's look it up in the pro real fast. I see. Yeah, they are due after the close today.
This is in consolidation station. So obviously it's going to, and we've seen some of the plays here, some of the tech ones have really moved up, sell off on good earnings. Sometimes you see that happen a few times and then people, oh, I'm just going to sell them ahead of time. So this could actually benefit from a little bit later in the cycle. I think if they beat, I think this could actually rally. Just because I think people are already thinking, oh, you beat, you go down, you miss, you go up. Well, that was today's story. Maybe tonight's story could be different. So Datadog has been hanging out here near the highs. Let's see what the numbers are. If the numbers are good, this thing could be over 100.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to have to chew through the trio of highs and the 98 handle. 98.14 and 99.89 is the all-time high. Those three highs right there. That's $6 away. If you get a look at that ahead of the report, that might not be a bad area. As far as the dailies go, you've had two lower highs, so I'll use 95.36. It's down $1.07. No real downside. Holding 92 is pretty important. 91.70, the low from yesterday. 92.13 is the previous day's low. So just hanging out ahead of the report.
Sono, we're going back to the earnings because chat's got a lot of earnings stocks in there. And I do want to talk this one as well. Getting the beats here this morning. Give us the numbers.
Yeah, this is the Bluetooth speaker company, right?
Yeah.
We have one at the office that no one knows.
Good speakers. Control.
52 cent loss per share last quarter. That was looking for a 27 cent loss estimate. So a big miss on the EPS. Sales did beat $249 versus $235 million. They gave some guidance for the year that was above estimate. So good guidance, but light earnings for last quarter.
It's a loved stock, pulling back. Stocks in a clear uptrend, getting a pullback here, which is going to try to break trend. I think you got buyers 14, 15. I think, you know, buying the dip on stocks that are in uptrends are always a good idea. I'd be more inclined to buy the dip on this one.
Traded down 2.25, 15 and a quarter. I don't like that it's breaking down here through this 15.50 area. So for me, in order for this thing to get some life, you got to get back over 15.50, 15.60. And I see a little bit more downside in this one than perhaps you, Dennis. I'd maybe would wait to 14.63. That represents your low on July 16th.
Jumping back to the chat.
Back to the chat here. Let's go look at – actually, you know what? There was a ticker drops in for a couple of days that we haven't looked at that I want to get to. PETS, P-E-T-S.
Pet Meds?
Yeah, we have another. This was dropped in a couple of days ago.
Wow.
They had earnings on Monday.
That is consolidation station. That is classic support holding on 30. 30 is the line in the sand. That is a Harlan Pine. What number jumps out at you? 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30, 30. As long as this thing's holding 30, try it on the buy the dip. If this thing breaches 30 and it's been down here for a while, so eventually it could be in trouble. Then you always got to watch for the sometimes what they like to do is take out 30, go to 29, shake everybody else lean on 30, and then bring it back above 30. So I'd actually like it better if it went down to 29, then pop back up with 30, because then you shake out everybody who's been leaning on this support. So, but support is support and pellets broken. $30 is huge.
I'm looking at you looking at 30. I look at 32. I'm looking at all those highs.
Little resistance.
Yeah. Yeah.
You trade that little range in there.
Trade
your time frame's shorter than mine, Joel.
No, I'm just looking at it. Just looking at it. You know, you put your buy stop in there. If it gets above of 32, I mean, it's got some room here on the dailies. But trading range 31.55, not quite up at the upper end of the trading range.
You know what's interesting too, just taking away from the chat for a second, ADT, because they reported and you've got this stock that's almost, you know, you're starting to get to a point where you're filling a lot of the gap. Obviously we gapped up on the Google deal at a certain point, and the earnings were a disaster, but the earnings isn't pricing in the Google deal. At a certain point here, ADT, could it be a buy?
ADT, I would just point out, has not had a profitable quarter since the last quarter of 2018.
Does profits matter?
I'm just saying.
It's still a hell of a gap, and it's down to 9. I don't think it's going to fill all the way to 9, and the stock was 17 after the Google deal. I think you're getting in this an 11 handle. I think it's interesting as a trade for a bounce. I think it's interesting. I think this is a stock that they might actually buy the dip on, because the earnings were a disaster, but people were all excited with this Google deal, which has obviously nothing to do with the earnings reports. So I think people buy this dip. And how low did it get? It got lower than this, didn't it? They already did buy the dip. Got down to 11.
Yes, they did.
I think mid-11s, I think I might take a flyer.
Yeah, to me, that's just like you're buying in the middle of no man's land.
Right? A little bit.
Yeah,
but you think it's going to fill the gap all the way?
I don't know.
They just take the Google deal and throw it out the window when they were doubling the stock, you know, 3 days ago on it.
I know. Dennis, why don't you buy a little bit here and then buy more when it goes to 9?
Maybe that's the way you play it. Buy a little bit in the 11s, and I always lose when I buy a partial position, and then buy the rest of the position down 9. It's not a bad idea. Kind of like it.
I just want alarm got a bounce, you know? That thing got blasted.
Alarming.
Remember we talked about that?
Yeah, I think we got that one right. We've been getting a lot wrong lately, but we got that one right. Yeah, that sold off on it. I was like, I think it's going to bounce back, and it did. It's up 6-7 bucks from there.
Okay, S&P futures.
Look, we got a good call. I've had some back
in the green here. We went green. We nice rally off that low. They liked that early jobs report number, getting us green on the session, hanging out 33.17.
What about the trade desk here? TTD reports after the close today, and it has been on.
Oh my lord!
It has been on, exactly. That's what I said.
Price for perfection. Let's watch the rotation. The rotation is going to matter today. So if they continue to sell off tech, rallies and TTD should be sold. But if they reverse it today and they start buying the tech stocks again, then not everything changes. So there's a lot of information from the macro pit, from the overall stock market, that is going to dictate how TTD does, because they're probably going to blow it away. But this is definitely priced for perfection. So the question is, how are they going to be looking at tech? Right now, they're looking at it like, we still kind of like value better than tech, at least in the last few days. Are they going to reverse it today or not? I've started to see a reversal in the pre-market already that I feel like tech is starting to get some love. So that's the question. And we've seen, you know, multiple stocks, multiple cloud stocks and tech stocks that have been running and running and running. We've seen them, you know, reverse multiple times on good earnings. I think that people might, I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm just saying it's crowded trade, but maybe everybody's anticipating that it's crowded now.
Yeah. I'm not looking forward to having Ryan Craver on again, because he pounded the table on this stock. I don't know how many
times. It's been unbelievable.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. Not much to say. He hit 500.
Ryan's a great guy. What's wrong with Ryan?
I don't know. He begged me to buy it.
500 on the kisser is huge.
Yeah, 500.
It's just a huge number.
Yeah, maybe I'll buy it at 501. You know, that would be a clear breakout there. No, I'm joking. Great move.
It's going to move. I don't know what the expectations are, but it's going to move huge on the earnings. So it's going to be a huge move.
All right. Well, in 5 minutes, I'm going to bring on the CFO of Chegg, Andy Brown. CHGG is a ticker. If you don't know it, we're going to talk about education is at a really weird spot right now. So we're going to talk with him about that. They just had a blowout quarter. Talk about that. So that'll be in 5 minutes. Let's go to a couple more tickers from the chat. I'm seeing a lot flowing by here. Generac, we've talked about that in the past few weeks. We are coming into hurricane season here.
Yes.
So that is a seasonal trade that we do see.
This doesn't
pretty much every year.
But this has just been on fire even like way before going in. And obviously maybe it was COVID and everybody's buying generators because they think eventually we're all going to lose power. I don't know what the play is on that, but unbelievable how much GNRC has been running. I like all these stocks are so hard to do technically because they're all straight up. They've been running you're chasing the hell out of them all, but they continue to go higher.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like it's tough. Like I like Consolidation Station. Like the time to buy Generac was when it was 140 and it sat there for 3-4 days and then it broke out and then it's the gap.
Never gave you a chance.
But never gave you another chance. I mean, AMD was, you know, a good call by me and I was saying it was 76. I think it's going to 100. I said by the end of the year, it's 85. I mean, that was a time to strike when it was in Consolidation Station. To come in and buy GNRC now, and are they due to report? It's coming, isn't it? When's GNRC report?
Let's check it out in the Benzinga Pro. I'm seeing an unconfirmed date. So, oh, no, they're already out. They already reported.
That was the gap and go. I mean, it keeps running. You got hurricanes. You got lots of things firing on all cylinders. Keep raising up your stops if you're in it. But if you're coming and buying it now, it's due for a pullback. So, like, you look back to May, and you can see a similar. You had a gap when you went from 100, and you ran to 120, and then you had two ugly days where it really got ugly there for a bit. So the time to strike was when it came back to the original level where it broke out from, like $100. You did, you know, after a month, you did get a second chance. I think that's the same story here. I mean, maybe there's a story, maybe the market cools off, maybe this thing gets back to 140, 150, then you strike. But just chasing them here, you can do it, and it's been working, but eventually they pull the rug out from under you, and the thing drops 15 points in a day, and then you're like, what? So I don't know how to control the risk here, and that's probably why I don't chase stocks.
Generac, I don't even know what to tell you on this one. Trading up 258, just pre-market.
Like, why is it up again today? Oh, it got upgraded. Bank of America upgraded it. And that's just it. You have these earnings, and then you have the analyst upgrade cycle coming because they all got all chase price and raise their price targets, and that's what keeps driving the prices higher. But the train left the station 5-6 days ago, right before the earnings. And if you're looking at it now, I mean, you're jumping on a moving train. I don't know when it stops. Nobody knows when it stops.
It's not going to stop. I think that's the point.
Well, no, it will stop. We just don't know where the stop is.
Of course.
So, I mean, that's the one thing is, you know, people who buy and chase this think it's going to go up forever. I mean, so going back, and I can go on a quick tangent here because we're going to run out of time. I'll make it really quick. Going back to when I originally started trading, I was chasing everything too. I was like, oh, this is moving. Oh, I'm going to jump in this. And I would, you know, you'd make on one thing and then you'd lose and then you'd lose and then you'd make a little bit, you lose. No consistency at all with chasing stocks, which is why I learned the hard way. I don't chase stocks. So I wait for Consolidation Station, and then I strike. You know, it was tough to strike on this at the Consolidation Station because the earnings was coming. But, I mean, the AMD example, you know, from 77 you know, the other day, had three highs in the same area. It's looking like it's ready to go. NVIDIA was the same thing. It was in Consolidation Station for a month, just around, you know, between 400 and 425. And now it takes off. So, you know, it's buying them when they're ready to go as opposed to buying them when they're going.
All right, guys, any final thoughts before I bring on our next guest, Andy Brown, on today's market? Maybe for you, Dennis, since you're going to go.
Yeah, I just think you're going to be in Rotation Station here. Again, watch the IWM. You are trading higher right now. Value is winning a little bit over growth. But again, we're on day three, and it seems like on day three it always turns. So I'd be cautious chasing that trade right now.
All right, I want to bring on our next guest now, Andy Brown. As I mentioned, he's the Chief Financial Officer at Chegg. Chegg's coming off a massive quarter. I'll read you some numbers here as Andy comes on. Record quarterly revenue for them, $153 million. That growth was driven by services revenue, which grew 57%, and subscriber growth, which grew 67%. Andy, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
I know it's early for you, so I appreciate you coming on with us. What drove that massive growth last quarter?
Wow, yeah, it's been a remarkable ride, not just for one quarter. However, it's been, you know, we've been growing very rapidly for the last, you know, several years. But as you know, the onslaught of the COVID virus, as bad as it was, and kids unfortunately had to leave campus and go learn from home, we saw an accelerated increase in our new subscribers, as you know, the help that they would normally get at school wasn't there, and we certainly benefited from that.
So your CEO, Dan Rosenzweig, said that you're increasing your investment in international growth. I was wondering if you could just break down the growth trajectory of the business from the U.S. and then comparing that to international, because they're two different markets.
Yeah, so if you looked at Chegg, I don't know, 18 months ago, we were primarily a U.S.-based service for our students, college students, high school students. And we started in the beginning of last year making some significant investments in international, both from a system standpoint, e-commerce, where we could do multi-currencies, content for their international markets, and then starting to do some marketing. And what we've seen is a significant acceleration of our growth internationally, and it re-accelerated as COVID hit. And the thing that's been really remarkable to us is we focus first on the English speaking countries, right? You can imagine Canada, UK, Australia. But what's been remarkable to us is that we've seen an influx of students in the last, half year that are non-English speaking. So countries like Turkey, Saudi Arabia, South Korea. So yes, we've seen so we are now becoming truly an international service for our students, and it significantly increased our TAM.
So let's talk about this coming school year for a second. Right now, districts around America are trying to decide, do we go full remote this year? Do we go a hybrid model? Do we go just proceed as usual? Would either of those three approaches have a material impact on Chegg?
I think what you've seen with COVID is what we've talked for many years that if you're betting on Chegg, you're betting on the inevitable, and that we built our company around that. We believe that more and more education was going to be online, and so it's more accessible, available, relevant. And what we've seen as a result of COVID is an acceleration of that. So when we think about the fall semester, for example, whether kids are going in person, whether it's online, or what most are doing, interestingly enough, is a hybrid model, right? You're getting a lot of colleges where they're allowing either a portion of the kids onto campus, or they're allowing all of the kids onto campus, but then there some classes are online, some classes are in person. But either way, we believe we benefit, and we believe what we've seen, this is a seminal point where we believe that, in fact, the face of education and kids' ability to learn online has changed. As a result of the pandemic.
Oh, Joel, let me unmute you real fast.
Oh,
nope, Joel, we got you.
Unmuted. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Just going back, I'm thinking about the universities here, and the amount of money that students have to spend to go to school. And I know this is probably throwing you a little bit of curveball here, but like if you were the president of a major university right now, obviously the safety of the students are number one. I mean, what are you thinking? What are you going to do? I don't see, I think we just have a generational change here. With as far as universities go, and it costs a lot of money to run them. If you were switch your hats and you're president, let's say University of Michigan right now, I mean, what are you thinking? What's your plan?
Well, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, if you think about universities, the traditional institutions, not the online institutions, because I do believe more and more kids will start using online institutions like Southern New Hampshire University and Western Governors. But the traditional, what I'll call residential schools that like I went to fundamentally haven't changed, right? I mean, I've been out of school for 38 years. I go back and visit with I'm on the business school advisory board at Eastern Illinois University. And truth be told, in 38 years, nothing has changed. It's the same old, right? It's the same old classroom. It's the same old schedule. And yet technology has changed. And in fact, the student has changed, right? So this that traditional 18 to 22 year old student is now a 25, 26 year old student that is working, that has that. And so I think there's got to be fundamental change at what I'll call the traditional universities. They've got to start accessing and using technologies that pretty much every other industry has used, right? I mean, if I think about, you know, just industries in general, I mean, almost every industry we know about is being disrupted by technology, right? I mean, think about movies and Netflix. I mean, just think about everything. And so I do believe that there's going to be some fundamental changes, and the universities as we know them today, the traditional universities, particularly things like state schools, it's going to change, and it's got to be lower cost. It's got to be more relevant, which is why you think about it, why you're seeing an explosion of skills-based companies, something that we just got into, right? We purchased a company back in October, Thinkful, because what employers want is relevant skills, is what they're really desiring. It's less about the degree and it's more about relevant skills.
So from 2010 to 2018, the enrollment rate at four-year colleges rose 10% in this country. It sounds like you're saying that you see that number declining. If that's the case, how does that impact your company?
Yeah, so you know, so when you think about it, what we do is we support both sides of the education spectrum, right? We've got academic learning where we support academic learning, and we now support skills-based learning. And we do believe that skills-based learning over time is going to become more relevant, because when you think about it, that's what employers are looking for. They're looking for the relevant skills to get the job done. That's why we branched out into skills-based learning back in October of last year.
I want to ask you about something that you talked about on a call with Jeffries last month or a couple months ago. This is Chegg is a subscription service. This is a problem that all subscription services deal with, which is account sharing. And you said, and I'll quote you for a second. You said, "I don't think we comprehend as a company how big account sharing has been. This is a problem that's not unique to you." But how big a problem is account sharing for Chegg, and how are you dealing with it?
Yeah, so we've known about account sharing at Chegg for some period of time, for several years, and part of the reason we didn't address it was our goal early on was for Chegg to be ubiquitous on campus, right? So I mean, if you think about Chegg, if you think about Chegg today, we've become the verb on campus, as it were, right? People say, "I checked it." Right. So we've known about it. And we were in the process of addressing account sharing. We started to do that last year. It was more of we kind of went down two paths. One, what I will call a short-term path, kind of a whack-a-mole type thing, where it was very manual. And then the second part was a technological solution. However, when kids went off campus, what it revealed to us, and we don't know the exact numbers, but what it revealed to us how big it really was, because that proximity sharing that you can do on campus went away, right? If you think about it, nobody on campus went away. And so what that also informed us was we accelerated our investments around device technology management, right? Device management. And one of the things that we are implementing this fall, in the next few weeks, in fact, is device management, so we can control the number of devices that can access a subscription, whereas in the past we've not been able to do that. So that's one of the new things that's happening this fall.
I also want to talk about cheating, obviously, in the wake of the college admissions scandal last year is top of mind. Chegg has been targeted by short sellers, one of them called Chegg the poster child for institutionalized academic cheating. What is your response to that, and really, how do you prevent cheating?
Well, this is kind of an interesting thing. I think what you're talking about is some very isolated cases, and then clearly the short sellers are finding ways to poke holes in our thesis. But the fact of the matter is this: we are a learning site. When you think about other services out there where you can, where there's a lot of user generated content, right? Where kids can upload papers, they can upload tests, and they can download papers and download tests. That doesn't happen on Chegg. All of the content on Chegg is generated by Chegg. It's our own unique content. We also have an honor code that our students are obliged to follow. And if we find that they haven't followed that honor code, then we will, you know, we will suspend them. And at some point we expel them if they're repeat offenders. And so, but so the net of this is, you know, in any environment, you're going to have some kids that want to cheat. So Chegg's not the problem. It's more the student.
Here's a question we got from our chat. In the wake of record revenue, quarterly revenue, and the guidance raise, actually, do you have any plans to increase the pay rates for your subject matter experts?
Well, we do that on a periodic basis. So we've got, for those of the folks, other folks that are on the line, we have 70,000 or more subject matter experts that we contract across the globe. To help with our textbook solutions and our expert Q&A. And they get paid on a per question basis, and that's those pay rates are reviewed on an annual basis. And over the last several years, have increasingly been, you know, we're paying a little bit more each year for those questions.
Joel, you have a quick one.
How are the gym classes going?
The gym classes. I can tell you the gym is closed at our headquarters. That's for sure. The headquarters is closed.
I'm just thinking about my favorite class, you know, gym and recess in elementary school. But no, right. I mean, I guess that's going to be hard to execute, huh?
Well, I mean, a lot of stuff is hard to execute, right? I mean, I think you may have seen, was it Rutgers who canceled their college football season?
Yeah, UConn, yeah.
UConn, okay. It was UConn because I think we're not going to be going back to the old normal in the fall. Let's whether it be the academic side of education or whether it be the athletic side, things are definitely are not normal. Truth be told, I don't think we ever get back to normal. I think there will be a new normal at some point in time, but it won't be what it was, right? Whether it's academic or whether it's in the sporting arena.
And then, Andy, last one for you, just in terms of the stock. Like you said, you've been growing. It's been steadily going up for the past 4 years or so, but you've never seen anything like what you've seen in the past few months. Your market cap has basically doubled since April, and that's obviously just happening to a lot of stocks out there. But does this kind of sudden increase, does that concern you at all?
No. Well, I mean, why would it concern me, right? I mean, I think people are starting to realize just how valuable Chegg is in the education space. We've kind of gone under the radar for some period of time. And I think now it's revealing itself that, in fact, online, on-demand, you know, adaptive education is the future, and people are beginning to realize that.
All right, Andy Brown is the Chief Financial Officer of Chegg. Andy, thank you so much for waking up early with us. We appreciate it, and stay safe out there.
Okay, thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, that'll be a wrap for us. Hope you guys enjoyed that. That'll be up on YouTube a few minutes after we're done here, and then it'll also be on our podcast, which is available on every major podcast platform. Please hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. We appreciate any and all feedback in that arena. You can also email us if you like. premarket@benzinga.com is our email. Don't forget the Benzinga Cannabis Hour is 2 p.m. today on our YouTube channel, so check that out. I want to thank Andy and our other guest, Mark Chaykin. Thanks to all of you in our chats. Please remember, all the information from our show is meant to be used as informational purposes and not for investing or trading advice. Everyone have a good rest of your Thursday. Joel and I will be back with you in the afternoon. Okay, phew, I was so nervous because I had to change the Zoom link on him, and
I didn't know
if he was going to join, honestly. I didn't know for the entire show if he was going to join, but he did, and we had no issues with the stream today, so it was good.
Okay. All right, no problem.
But funny gym question, I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, they, people hooted on
that
it.
That was funny. That was a good one.
That kind of threw him off guard, too. Okay, all right, I'll check with you in a little bit. Right. Thanks.